For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy game week, everyone.
His Bills will open up their 2024 regular season on Sunday at home against the Arizona Cardinals. It is a Tuesday, though, after a nice Labor Day weekend. And I want to remind you that head over to WGR550.com and enter for your chance to win a Blackstone 2-burner Black Outdoor LP Grass Griddle just in time for tailgate season, courtesy of Value Home Centers. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're talking a little bit of predictions today. Also having a little bit of fun at the Bills' expense as I was looking through the schedule, Josh, trying to find where I think their Billsy loss is coming. I am not with our last caller, Steve, on thinking they're going to be a good team. I trust almost nothing about them. I don't like Will Levis. A lot of their free agent moves seem to be in a desperation to make the team as good as humanly possible around Will Levis, and I don't even think it has exceeded all that much. Tajay Spears is a pretty cool running back, though. I like him. But that's the one. At home, October 20th, I could see the Bills losing that game. Just in like a, really? Really? Them? Of everybody? But I think this is going to be a little bit of a caveat. They have to be a good team, right? Like, they have to be a team that, you know, so here, for argument's sake, we get to that Tennessee game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they would have had to have beaten Arizona, Miami, Jacksonville, Baltimore, Houston, and the Jets, and then lose to Tennessee and go, that's the game you lost?
Yeah.
That's the one? Before that, it kind of just feels like it's like, oh, they're having a tough year. A lot of people are projecting them to have a tougher year.
You can even look back to last year, and it's a little tougher because they had a lot of struggles stringing wins together until after the bye week. And last year, if you want to look at Billsy losses.
Like seven of them.
Well.
I'm so serious.
Right. Even though they only lost six games. But
every one of them.
But the one that sticks out to me the most is the Denver game.
Yeah.
Even above the New England one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, New England one had its moments, but the Denver one was just like, yep, there it is. That's the game. That's the one.
For me, it was opening night against Zach Wilson.
I could see that, but it's different when it's an opening night game compared to...
Because it's week one. There is always this feeling of don't take week one too seriously.
Yeah,
there's a lot left of the season, yeah, right?
Right. I also, so as Zach said before, we have ESPN on in here, and they were just showing the preview for Jets and 49ers for next Monday night, a week from, 6 days away, mm-hmm. a week from yesterday. And they showed highlights, and the only things you see are 49ers highlights and Aaron Rodgers running out with a flag.
That's it. That's all.
Because you really can't put Jets highlights in there because Aaron Rodgers isn't in any of them.
You can
and the guy that's in all of them
yeah.
is Zach Wilson. So you can't, it's just so funny.
It was so weird last year. But that was, I think, the game though that was the most signs of like, okay, yeah, this season is going to be a little bit tougher of a road for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of hype going into it. Of course, it's on 9/11 as well. I mean, we joke now, but I mean, Aaron Rodgers coming out of the tunnel, holding the American flag and running out with it. I mean, there was a lot of juice for that game. There was.
If he had played that whole game, and it would have turned out that way,
you're still frustrated by the Allen picks and how.
I think it's even. I think it's. Well, I don't know. I want to say it's even more frustrating because then it's you have to face them again later in the season, and how would that go?
Well, you got to face them again, but you could look and go, man, if Allen's just smart with the ball, they're fine. I think it was more the fact of like, yes, it's the same. Like, just hold on to the ball, or like, don't turn the ball over, you're fine. It's more the fact of like, you can swallow a loss to Aaron Rodgers much easier than a Zach Wilson one.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know why I was thinking that it would have been maybe more frustrating. I just think Aaron Rodgers, the personality, is frustrating.
Oh, no, of course.
That's my problem with it is he himself is just
frustrating.
Yeah. And I want the era to be done. Because when he was in Green Bay, for the most part, in terms of here in Buffalo and in the market and everything, he really wasn't unlikable. He wasn't under a microscope from us specifically. I'm sure if you're
a Green Bay fan, you're like, this is exhausting.
Yeah, or even like, you know, a Bears fan or something like that. It's like, oh, I'm so sick of this guy. And that's kind of how we feel now. But I remember back to when he was in Green Bay, I kind of liked him. I thought he was kind of fun. And
oh, for all of his early parts of his career, he was easily my favorite quarterback
in football. Yeah, because he had this big throw. He had this presence around him, kind of. And he just seemed like that dude.
Mm-hmm.
In an era of Tom Brady's the best, of, oh, look, there's somebody else on the other side of the league that is also good and more tolerable. But now you're seeing that maybe he wasn't.
His career, though, is always going to be fun to look back at. Interesting. Not the personality. I mean, Aaron Rodgers' career. Because for as good as he was, and in somewhat of an NFC that was ripe for the taking, he makes it to one Super Bowl. Wins it. And so you'll never be able to take that away from him. He has excelled past, you know, guys like Dan Marino. He has the Super Bowl. But for much of his career, it was Aaron Rodgers is significantly the best quarterback in the NFC. Then Russell Wilson kind of arrived, and you're like, all right, he's maybe the best deep ball passer. Very similar to Rodgers in kind of how they play. Maybe a better deep ball passer, but Rodgers still maybe the better overall player. I think Breeze were already all kind of starting to look at his career a little bit more, you know, okay, he was awesome, but is he an all-time great? Maybe not. I mean, there are too many years in there where, yes, he threw for 5,000 yards. His team went 7-9, 6-10. You know, there was a stretch there. Yes, his defenses were bad, but let's be honest, they weren't that bad, where it's just it felt sort of empty, especially, you know, he didn't really push the ball down the field. And so it's just you're going to look back at, you know, Matt Ryan and Cam Newton each have like one great year, and they propel their teams to the Super Bowl, and Aaron Rodgers in a few NFC Championship games, rough. By both him, Mike McCarthy would have you, but I think his career, especially if like this is like the last year, or if he really never does anything with the Jets and it kind of just like simmers out, I think his career is going to be kind of fun to look back to. Because like, even guys like Peyton Manning, like, yeah, he gets the second Super Bowl. No one cares that like he was essentially a passenger. Like, no one really cares. He made it to three. No, he made it to four. He made it with two with Denver. So he made it to four, you know, won two of them. You feel good. Brady obviously is essentially untouchable in terms of like how many Super Bowls he's gone to. Mahomes has already passed a lot of guys because of his playoff stats and all that. But Rodgers is like one of like the few, like, I've won a Super Bowl, and yet his career is still somewhat criticized because of how good he was and then how bad a lot of the playoff moments were. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mark and Tonawanda. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, good man. Thanks for having me on. I was actually at that Jet game last year, and
so
it was
sorry.
Just, even if you don't like Rodgers, him holding the flag, man, it pumped you right up.
It was an electrifying moment, 100%.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. But, my point here is the whole Diggs thing still blows my mind, and what I mean by that is, like, we still could have drafted Coleman this year. You'd go into the season because you're kind of binded by Diggs' contract. Production, I mean, whatever. You're still not eating $31 million of dead cap this year. You have a really good receiver still in Steph Diggs. And now you got a guy like Coleman. It'd be the best receiver, you know, duo that Josh Allen's had. So I'm going into this week. Granted, it's Tuesday. I want to be a little critical because Sunday morning at 7 a.m. the grass lot. I want to be pumped up. But I'm just trying to think about this. I got to get pumped up. I want you guys to help me out here, okay? I'm just down. I wish the receiver core was better around Josh Allen right now.
Yeah, no, Mark, I totally get it, man. Thanks for the call. I will tell you, I think the optics would have been better if Diggs is on the team. I do think the Bills are doing what's better for them in the long term. It's just, it's painful because unlike on Madden or NCAA 25, we can't just sim the season. You know, the season's not over in 25 minutes. Depends on how fast you can click the button. It's a long time. We're going to go through seasons. We're going to go through a winter, and it's painful. But I think the Bills have set themselves up now to eat the $31 million in dead cap now. You know, we in the first hour, we also talked about like all the draft capital they've accumulated, the cap space they've accumulated with getting rid of not just Diggs, but a lot of the, you know, the older grizzled veterans. They're moving on to a different era. The problem is with that, though, it is completely unknown. We don't know if Shakir, Kincaid, Curtis Samuel, Keon Coleman are going to be good enough for Josh Allen. I have brought up the point, it worked for Kansas City, and they were actively harmful to the offense. I simply do not believe that will be the case for the Buffalo Bills. I also think the Bills have set themselves up more to be successful in the sense of it's not just going to be a one- or two-man show. It's going to be a group effort with the superstar quarterback. If you can have it where you have two superstar wide receivers, that is absolutely the way to go. That is just not realistic in a long-term basis. You're going to have to pay one, if not both of them, and you simply can't, or you're going to lose a lot of other guys on your roster. So I think the next best thing is to not just have one superstar wide receiver and what we saw last year, which was to really bad. Gabe Davis, I think, is an wide receiver. Very good at blocking. He's a physical guy, what have you. But in terms of being a wide receiver two, which was his role for 2 years, not very good. And then we talked about Hardy and Trent Sherfield earlier today. Neither of them eclipsed 30 targets. Neither of them even eclipsed past 15 receptions last year. And this is a team that was desperate for help at wide receiver, desperate by the middle of the year.
How much of that, though, in with Hardy and Sherfield specifically, just because, like you said, they needed catches.
Yep.
But they weren't being targeted that much. Was it a lack
they were
of
open?
Was it a lack of trust or was it a lack of being open?
I think it was trust and you weren't open.
Okay.
I think there's a big reason.
I wonder sometimes, maybe was the scheme not for them and it just didn't work out in that sense? Or was it they're not good enough to get open and there's no trust there, or not as much trust there between Allen and those two receivers?
Well, I think it's the thing, but the trust would have developed, you know, in the offseason, in
right.
training camp,
yeah.
in the preseason.
But that's
and if
that's
all of a sudden he's sitting
is,
there going, these guys aren't getting open. Like, they're not making big plays for me, what have you. You're already seeing it in camp, too. Like, Keon Coleman's not getting open that much. Like, his separation is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Allen is still throwing him the ball because he's making big catches.
Right.
Sure, it's practice, but he's
no,
coming
but he's
down
shown,
with the ball.
And he's shown the ability that he can make those big catches. Granted, they're out the college level, but he's shown that ability. And again, I go back to the Mitch Trubisky pass in the Pittsburgh, I think it was the Pittsburgh game. Was it the Pittsburgh game? Where?
Well, yeah, it would have had to have been.
Yeah,
either,
right.
Either
right,
that
you're
or,
right,
or
you're
the
right.
first game.
No, it was the Pittsburgh game, I think, then, because it was when the one where Coleman was asked about it. He's like, yeah, I should have had that. It should have been a catch. And it was clearly one of those things where, yeah, Coleman was in the right spot and a little out of position, but the pass was just too far above his head, and Allen would not have made that mistake. It's nothing against, you know, Coleman or Trubisky or anybody, but I think that when you look at his performances in the preseason, you can't fully take everything in, positive or negative, because of the fact that he was playing with Mitch Trubisky most of the time, and when he did get the couple Allen targets, it was...
Well, It
was the one, yeah. And you're being covered by Jalen Johnson at that point.
Yeah.
So, and not to say that, you know, that's to give Coleman any excuse or whatever, because you're going to face number one cornerbacks. But in your first preseason game as a rookie, your first target, really, is you going up against one of the better cornerbacks in the league. Because, I mean, Jalen Johnson's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that when you're looking at it like this, it's hard to tell if the positives and negatives are really coming to fruition.
But that's why you take the preseason pledge, right? I mean, it's a joke, but it's also you're going to get the most basic you-know-what ever. Like, that's what it's here for. They're barely games. Teams really don't like to do them. It's to get butts in seats and to pay a little bit more money for some games that aren't really even games. Most coaches do prefer...
They're glorified practice.
Yeah, but most teams and coaches prefer the closed practices or the joint practices with coaches and teams that they trust. They prefer that. Mm-hmm. And so you're really, I think the only thing you may have seen that was legitimate compared to the, you know, compared to the regular season is somewhat of the kickoff. And that's it. That's the only thing. And so that's where, like, yeah, like, I'm just happy Keon Coleman was on the field. I'm glad he basically didn't see the field at all in the third preseason game, because that kind of signals that, hey, he is going to be starting and they're going to use him. I think they're going to be forced to. I don't really think the Bills love playing young guys or rookies. I think they're going to be more forced to, though. But, yeah, you just can't take anything. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I'm even trying to get a little bit excited about the fact that, you know, Shakir was – Khalil Shakir was targeted four times and had four catches. But, like, you can't. They're running very basic stuff. There's not much you can grab onto it. The little you can, you're like, sure. Greg Rousseau may have developed a power rush. I don't know. But he made Broderick Jones look like a complete bust. And the next week, Broderick Jones looked okay. You know, he wasn't a turnstile, but against the Bills, he let up 2.5 sacks in like a quarter to one guy. I mean, so that's always the tough part, and I try to take a lot of it from just what I keep seeing in camp, what I hear reporters are saying, which is Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir keep getting open. They're incredibly consistent for Allen, and he keeps targeting him. Keon Coleman keeps making big plays. He's not necessarily getting wide open, but he's making big plays. And if they've got a better OC than they had last year, which I believe Joe Brady is, he'll be able to kind of scheme him open a little bit more, what have you. I think the big issue, though, back to the original point, was that last year their third and fourth wide receiver simply weren't getting open. Mm-hmm. I think a big part of it was they were not getting open. They weren't making difficult catches for Allen, even in practice, to where he could be like, I'm going to force this ball to him just because I know he can come down with it. I don't think they were doing any of it. I think as well, over the last few years, they've tried to get cute. Making Isaiah McKenzie their full-fledged slot receiver was a huge miss. It was a huge miss.
Now, Curtis Samuel, on the other hand, I think
he has proven, though, in the league that he can do it. He just needs to stay healthy.
You're right.
That's been a big issue in his career.
I think with him specifically, with Samuel, it's – I don't know if he really – I haven't seen it, but I don't really know if he has the track record of making the difficult catch. But I think what Allen also missed last year was the – this guy will catch it every single time.
Yeah, he makes the easy.
Right.
Or he makes the hard look easy. He also makes the easy look easy.
Yeah, and I think back to Cole Beasley,
mm-hmm.
right, in that same slot role of catching pretty much everything that was thrown his way, whether it was hard or not. I just wonder with Samuel, like I said, I don't know if he can make that difficult catch, but I also don't know if he's the player that would put Allen in a position to make a difficult throw.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be able to give
be
Allen...
be consistent the whole thing.
Yeah, he'll be able to give Allen that consistent open target where, hey, this throw is going to be easy every single time,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to get 5-6 yards out of it. And I honestly, like I said, I think that's one of the main things he missed last year was not having that consistent target to throw the ball 6 yards on 2nd and 8.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I think that's where you do add in like Samuel, Shakir, Kincaid, all these guys that have shown mm-hmm. they can get open and they do make consistent catches. I mean, you mentioned a lot that, you know, Shakir had what, like an 88% catch rate or something like that.
And I
think that's going to come down just due to volume.
I don't think it'll come down that much. I think it'll still stay above 70. There's another prediction for you. You happy?
There you go. I'm getting him out of here.
It'll stay above 70 because I think Shakir is that consistent. Look at, again, preseason pledge, but his 5 targets in the first game caught all 5 of them, and 3 of them were probably...
Well, no, the first game went 3-for-3, and then the next game went 1-for-1.
3-for-3, sorry. I was thinking of Samuel and Shakir.
Had five targets and caught all five.
Shakir himself had 3 targets, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to think back to them, but I know there was one of them that was like a, wow, holy cow.
Went for 19 yards.
How did he come down with that sort of thing, and how did he make mm-hmm. a play out of that? And I'm not trying to, you know, be over-exaggerative. I just think that Shakir will be that consistent guy. I mean, we've seen even earlier in his career, in the few moments we've had for last season, there were these big plays that he's making. Granted, it's only a few, but that was, you know, his rookie year.
I wonder where he is at career-wise if his second year training camp was not a disaster.
Right.
And it's like
last year you're saying.
Yeah, from every report last year his camp was bad. I mean, that's why we were talking about Andy Isabella.
Right.
We were talking about potentially Khalil Shakir getting caught.
We were talking about Khalil Shakir not even making the team.
And so that's and that's another thing that like just leaves me kind of like, oh man, like all right, that's not great, cuz
good receivers are good receivers. Like, you kind of know.
Right, but when you
maybe can't get on the field, but you kind of know.
When you thrust someone into the spot like they had to do last year with Shakir and even Kincaid at times, you're going to find out what kind of player they really are. And I think that was part of Shakir's whole thing, maybe at training camp, but most of the season last year, was that, well, target one is Diggs, target two is Davis, target three is kind of Kincaid, kind of Shakir, kind of Cook. Like, it was this it weird was a hodgepodge. Yeah. And then at some point in the season, I mean, you can see it in the stats, I think it was week 10, 11, Shakir all of a sudden is, all right, you're going to get all these targets. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah, you're going to be a major factor.
There it is. He shows up and he does good. And I think that if you continue that trend of getting him more targets, getting him more involved in the offense, having him be one of, if not the centerpiece, it's going to be better for him as the player and better for the team as well. Because I think as you bring in that consistency, as you bring in those reps, you have him sort of stay fresh, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. It's not this, hey, we're going to pass you in the first quarter and then not again until the third quarter.
Instead, be a consistent part of the offense.
You're going to be a consistent part of the offense and stay locked in this whole time. Whereas before, it was kind of this in and out. You don't really know what's going to happen. So I think what we're going to see from Shakir this year is a lot similar to last year, just at a higher volume.
It's interesting, too, looking at his offensive snaps from last year. In week one, 10%, then 15, 24, 28, 32, and then 39, through the first 6 weeks. We've talked about it in the first game, no catches, no targets, nothing. And then for the next five games, he has five total targets, one in each. And then he has that 39% on the field, only one target for one catch, 13 yards. Then it's against New England. He's on it for 34% of the time, four catches, four targets, 35 yards. And then you see the jump, 65% against Tampa, 6 for 6, 92, 71 against Cincinnati, 4 for 4, 57, 76 against Denver, although only gets two targets, one catch for 24 yards, 74 against the Jets, four targets, three catches, 115 yards and a touchdown. Against Philadelphia, 80%, five targets, three catches, 47 yards, 61. So, I mean, it stays pretty consistent of like, okay, now he's above 45. I think the only game that he wasn't even above 50 was the Dallas game, where eventually the Bills just decided, well, they're not going to change their defense. Let's just keep running, and ultimately only gets one target. But then in the playoffs, against Pittsburgh, 67, 3 for 3, 31 yards. And then against Kansas City, 70%, 9 targets, 7 catches, 44 yards. So you've already kind of seen, like, now he is on the field more. The reason why I bring up, like, his early careers, I do wonder, where they had been in year two if, like, Shakir came in and took what was somewhat of a promising rookie year of, like, man, like, he looks all right. Like, he's making big plays. He was targeted in the playoff game, comes down with that catch against Miami or what have you, something big, and continues that into year two. Are we looking at, those first games? I mean, the first game against the Jets, he's on the field 10% of the time. The Raiders, he's on it for 15%. Are you all of a sudden looking that, like, right away, he's on the field for 30, 40% of the time, and we can build, I guess, a better thesis here or a better argument? Because right now, yeah, a lot of it is hope. A lot of it is going off of they've lost 240 targets and 150 catches, and they've got to make that up somehow. Kincaid can only get so much. Curtis Samuel can only get so much. And Kincaid's the only receiver, or Shakir's the only receiver on this team that has caught passes from Josh Allen before this year. And so, there's a lot of that, of just, like, he's somewhat the elder statesman of the wide receiver room in terms of the Bills offense, and that's where I do get nervous of just great receivers show that they're great pretty soon. It does not, I think, take till year three for them typically to pop off. Some, yes, absolutely. It's progression is not linear. I get it. But I would say that was maybe my only fear with Shakir, is that to start year two, he was not only a non-factor. We were talking about a wide receiver that they just picked up willy-nilly, and it was kind of like, maybe he's the guy and Shakir's not, because Shakir's having such a bad camp.
How much of this has to do with the Gabe Davis effect?
In what sense?
Because think back to 13 seconds, right? Gabe Davis has that incredible performance.
Yeah, okay.
And everyone's thinking, oh, this is the guy. This is our wide receiver two.
Here we go.
He might be the guy of the future after Diggs leaves, or whenever that happens. We'll have to wait and see. Let's just go into the next year and have fun with it, right? We all buy Gabe Davis jerseys, me and you specifically. And
love it.
We're all let down. And then it's like, oh, well, okay. It was an up and down year. The Bills were still great. He has time to figure it out. It's fine. Next year, oh, he's just kind not of the same. There yeah. for 10 out of the 17 games, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what happened there with Gabe Davis is kind of what's maybe on the minds of a lot of us out there. I mean, it's kind of on my mind a little bit too now that I've thought about it.
Don't get too excited.
Don't get
yet.
Too excited because look to what happened in the past.
Yeah.
But I think Gabe Davis and Khalil Shakir are different players.
I agree.
If that's what's affecting you, give us a call 803-0550. I mean, if you're thinking, if you're worried about Shakir, if you're thinking that he's not going to be what we expect him to be because of somebody like Gabe Davis.
Yeah, is it maybe the holdback is that, you know, I've already bought into one wide receiver because of...
Why am I buying into another?
Yeah, that ultimately is not a first or second round pick. I mean,
yeah.
Davis was a fourth, Shakir's a fifth.
Mm-hmm.
That always kind of plays into it a little bit. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point because I hadn't necessarily thought about it until you brought it up of like, you know, we already did this with Davis and it really didn't work out. Yeah.
But I think they're two very different players, play very mm-hmm. different styles. So at the end of the day, I'm actually not that worried about it, but... It's definitely something that's in the back of my mind now.
Yep.
Of we've seen this happen before. Could it happen again just at a different type of wide receiver?
Yeah. 803-0550, number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here for about another half hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is WGR.
I just want to say you guys keep talking about a $20 million roster.
Yeah.
If you don't pay the right guys, you'll be out of luck.
That's life, Dave. That's life.
Congratulations. You just broke the internet.
That was so much fun. There is former Alabama head coach Nick Saban on his debut.
Why is
College Game Day?
Those old coaches like Belichick and Nick Saban just now really popular just when they get on TV.
Because they're good.
Because they can show their personality.
Yeah, they can finally show their personalities. Not terrified of the media of taking anything out of context. But that was awesome.
Because they are themselves now the media.
That is so much fun. I think, who is he talking about with that?
The Michigan, team? I think.
Was it Michigan?
Because I remember watching that video this morning and there was a Michigan graphic on the screen as he was talking. But... I'm not sure.
I feel like it was A&M.
Really?
I think it's somebody in the ACC or in the SEC. But oh man, that was. I'm excited to see Saban on College Game Day. I think number one, he has a very. I mean, there was a video that came out of Saban looking very stoic and serious, and Pat McAfee literally right next to him is like dancing, getting ready for the segment.
Saban even gave him like a side eye a little bit, and everyone's like, "Oh, what's going on there?" And yeah. Even Pat McAfee's like. I was just vibing, and he was just kind of focused in on whatever he was doing, so it's fine.
Yeah, like he was just, you know, he was getting ready. That was a lot of fun. I'm so glad college football is back. I know a lot of people know this about me. I'm a huge Texas fan, so like there was obviously some buildup for that. They you know, beat up on Colorado State 52-0.
Thoughts on Arch Manning's first ever
it was awesome.
Touchdown pass?
Great. We were playing golf while it happened, and Zach dropped his phone out of the
awesome.
Golf cart. I was teeing off, and Zach had to control himself for a second while I was swinging.
Well, as I'm like showing, you know, your buddy who we're golfing with, I'm like, dude, look at this, look at it.
And I'm standing up in the tee box, like, what's happening?
It's awesome.
I'm missing it.
It's great.
Yeah, no, it was so funny. Like, and the pass, the play was just insane.
It's very good. He also had a rushing touchdown. Did have a fumble. Had a nice.
Nah.
He didn't. Yeah, his first pass went to Jonte Cook, who was pretty good. Ryan Wingo's a freshman wide receiver. You know. They were getting involved. It was nice to see. They're on Game of the Week this week. for both the Big Ten Network and ESPN's College Game Day against Michigan. They are going to the Big House, and I am horrified. The real quick point on this, I am terrified because, Josh, that line opened up earlier in the summer at 3.5, that Texas was favored by 3.5.
Ooh.
Which made sense. You know, Michigan lost their head coach. It's going to be the second game. I'm blanking on their coach's name, but it's going to be his second game. They haven't figured out their quarterback. A lot of turnover. Michigan's kind of known as we more develop our players rather than it's immediate five-star studs, what have you. It is now ballooned to 7.5-point favorites for Texas on the road. It's a true road game. It is not like they're like in North Carolina or, you know, in Sharon Moore.
Yes, thank you.
He was their OC last year. I remember.
And
that
also, he coached Michigan the one game that Harbaugh was suspended
against Penn State. Yeah, so I mean,
was it Penn State?
Yeah, so he has a great win like in his resume, but you know, so there's beliefs there, and now it's ballooned to 7.5, and I'm just, Josh, I'm terrified. It means nothing for your standings. I mean, they're going to host Georgia later on in this year. They obviously have Oklahoma later with the Red River. But I'm like, oh man, like I am going to be an emotional wreck if they do beat Michigan. Because, I mean, the new poll is going to come out, I think, in about a half hour, a little after noon. Probably two top 10 teams. Again, true road game. And I was like this last year with Alabama. You know, going into Tuscaloosa, I think week two or three, and I was just like, just get me through this, get me through this. Mm-hmm. I feel bad. Like, I'm trying to get jazzed for, like, the Bills and Cardinals, and I am. But I'm like, it's week one. They'll survive if they lose. I'll be upset, and it will kind of be a little alarming, but they'll survive. Especially with college football, yes, even the 12-team playoff, there will be this kind of feeling of you got to win, like, every game. Like, you're, like, allowed to lose, like, one, maybe two. And I see Georgia already on the schedule, and I'm like, you're probably losing that game. Like, you're probably losing that game. And I see Oklahoma on there, and I'm like, oh, man. Like, and then A&M, not great on offense.
Mm-hmm.
But that rivalry is being restored for the first time since 2011. And, like, you know, that's going to be a whole thing just because it's a major rivalry that both teams have avoided for years, even in non-conference. So I'm nervous. 7.5-point favorites at the Big House on Saturday, noon kickoff. Thank goodness it's out of the way early. I don't have to wait till 7 at night.
Right. Yeah. That's the worst part about those games, too, is this, even any sporting event, it's I got to wait all day.
Right. That's part of what's killed me with primetime games, too, is like, you know, there are times I'm like, yeah, like I can now just like hang out and watch other football and what have you. It's like, if I have a rooting interest, I'm good. I don't really want to deal with
my
that.
My fantasy players aren't important in that game, then I'm good. I just want to watch the Bills play.
Exactly. We're talking a lot of predictions today. Me and Josh have kind of been given some as well. We've been hearing some of yours. Steve tweets in, my bold prediction for this season is that Josh Allen's completion percentage will be at 70%. He was close in 2020. That's true. He's at 69.2.
Wow.
But will he get it done? Will get it done this year? Let me check real quick on that Allen thing. And it was 69.2. Yes.
Wow.
And so he was very close that year as well, though they did have, you know, Stephon Diggs' first year, you had John Brown, you had Cole Beasley, Gabe Davis as well as on that roster. Like they had a lot of talent there, and that was, you know, Allen's ascension. Since then, he's kind of been hanging around 63%. Last year, he was at 66.5. I do agree, though, because I think they are going to go to the more short pass game. Mm-hmm. I think his completion percentage will jump up. I think 70%, that would be a lot, and I'd almost be a little worried if it was that high. That just means they're not ever really pushing the ball down the field, and I don't want that a part of the game to disappear entirely. I think defenses are zeroing in on, you're not going to beat us in one play. I don't want that gone completely, and I think if you're up that high, it's kind of gone.
Well, it's like a lot of other things we talked about this offseason. I think that it's okay if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to look at it's what do the rest of the stats say? Like before, when we talked about Dalton Kincaid's numbers for this coming season, and we talked about, oh, if he has like all these yards but no touchdowns, is it because, you know, he's getting them all the way to the red zone and then someone else like Ray Davis or even Josh Allen is just punching the ball in, mm-hmm. right? That's where I think that's where it depends on other numbers. If he has a 70% completion rating or completion percentage, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and is, you know, if he's mixing in that long ball every once in a while, if that hasn't disappeared, then I'm totally fine with it. But if the majority of that passing is the short game, I'm still okay with it because it's something we haven't seen the Bills be able to do effectively mm-hmm. in all of Allen's time here, really, except for the first couple of years with Beasley. And I mean, obviously John Brown wasn't part of the short game, but but when Beasley and John Brown were here, that was some of the best offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it also look at Brian Daboll being there, too.
Yeah, me and you have talked about it, though. I don't think the Bills really have yet. They haven't replaced John Brown.
No, but my point there was that was when this offense looked the most stable.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And obviously in the first year of Diggs, it was very good, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Bills should go more in on those, you know, short game plays
rather than going for the long ball.
Right. They should definitely mix in that long ball.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying go away from it completely, but I think it's okay if you lean a little more on that short to medium game than you have in the past.
Yeah. And that's totally fair. I think you've seen the Chiefs, and I think the reason why, even when their wide receiver room was so bad, it didn't go away entirely. You saw that with Marquez Valdes-Scantling last year. But they went more to, we're going to kill you with, you know, death by a thousand cuts. And for me, one of the more frustrating parts comparing Mahomes now has been Mahomes' complete willingness to really embrace that style of play, where Allen and maybe the Bills themselves have been, I guess, more hesitant to do so. They've fought against it much more, I think partially because they have a bazooka arm quarterback. I get it. But that was a big issue I had with Ken Dorsey. It's just, you know, they never really did the easy things. It was constantly hard. It was constantly down the field, even with guys that weren't getting open. But let's continue this wide receiver talk as we've got Joe on the line. Joe, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Hello. How are you today?
Doing very well.
Good. I was really concerned when Davis left because I felt, in a sense, that Diggs hogged the ball, and I thought that he played a lot on Josh Allen's mind about getting him the ball, and I thought that that created a lot with, you know, missing targets, and when Davis could have been the number one target, that would have made up for all the issues that they had. So I was really sad to see him leave. And I'm not saying where he is now he'll be a primary target, but I really believed in our system he would have just made up for all our things that we're talking about now.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call. I can't agree. Every time his role got bigger, he seemed to get smaller. You know, he never got past, I think, even 55%, you know, success rate in terms of targeting him, let alone catch rate. He was a guy that once he got past the third, fourth wide receiver role on the team, you saw his limitations. He just did not catch the ball consistently enough. He did not have a complete route tree. And even in games where we saw, like, oh, man, they're targeting him 9-10 times. This is great. It never was the next week. He was just not consistent enough. I think realistically we'd be having the same conversations because it would be like, what has shown you in Davis's 4 years with the Bills up to that point that he could all of a sudden become that number one guy? I think honestly we'd be having the same conversations. Really, I think the conversations would be, we can't expect, you know, more than 80 catches out of Gabe Davis because, I mean, when he's been targeted 90 times, he gets like 50 of them, maybe. And I think that is maybe the most frustrating thing with Gabe Davis is that you got a dude in the fourth round. I mean, he came into his rookie year and I think had 6-7 touchdowns. That's awesome coming out of the fourth round. The problem was he seemingly never became a better wide receiver. He kind of just stagnated and to a certain extent stayed the same. His stats would tell you effectively stayed the same.
There is a part of me too that wonders what a different offense would have made him look like, because his success came with the Brian Daboll offense in 13 seconds. And was that just kind of the perfect system for him, right? Was it, mm-hmm. was it Daboll knew how to unlock his potential, if you want to call it that, and it wasn't translated very well to a guy like Ken Dorsey or even to Joe Brady as well. And I do think about that sometimes, but I don't really know. I think it's more on the player at this.
It does get to a certain point.
I think it's more the player, and it depends on what happens here in Jacksonville now with him. But Jacksonville is just not the offense that I would put him in. Jacksonville has always looked shaky in this Trevor Lawrence era, mm-hmm. and that's not what Gabe Davis needs. Gabe Davis needs consistency. Gabe Davis needs, you know.
And Gabe Davis had consistency.
Right.
And ultimately, he was okay. He was a solid wide receiver in
the
league.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, mm-hmm. even with consistency, he still had trouble. So I'm really interested to see, was it somehow the offensive system he was in here, or was it the player?
Mm-hmm. 803-0550 is the number to call. Got to take a quick timeout before we come back and wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Before we run out of time here, let's go back to the phones. We've got Danielle on the line. Danielle, how are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
Very good. Now, please understand this is all remains to be seen, but I do feel that you are going to see a way happier Josh Allen on the field this season for the simple fact that I do feel that he had the pressure of Diggs wanting to be targeted every single play, and it was just impossible to do. You just couldn't do it. And I believe that also every time Diggs was screaming at Josh, it wasn't to pump Josh up. I mean, he was pissed at him because he wouldn't give him the ball. Mm-hmm. He didn't give him the ball. And, you know, he's going to a different team now, and he's not going to be targeted at every – he's – one, he ain't 24 years old, and he's not going to be targeted at every throw in Houston. I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to happen, and I think you're going to see a way more relaxed, happier Josh when he knows that he has numerous guys to go to and not just one guy – creating tons of pressure, thinking he's got to make the Hall of Fame, he's got to have 1,000 catches. And I just think that Josh felt that pressure of that as a team player that Josh is, was wanting to help Diggs. But in the end, I think it hurt all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see a way different, again, remains to be seen, but a way different player in Josh this season.
Yeah, Danielle, thanks for the call. And that's kind of what me and Josh were getting to a little bit earlier, where it's like the vibes feel different. You know, everyone's smiling. They're happy. Last year, it felt so exhausting that, like, just every, you know, of course you have, you know, Sean McDermott kind of stepping in a little bit at OTA saying that, you know, Diggs was missing, but it was an excused absence. But there was kind of a fight or a conversation, what have you, between the two. And that's why he left. And there was a lot going around. I think as well a big issue, and Daniel, you sort of brought it up too, is he's got a lot of guys to throw the ball to. I think that was a big issue too, that to a certain extent, it became Diggs and no one else. I mean, we talked about Gabe Davis there not really being consistent. We've talked today about Trent Sherfield and Deontay Hardy, neither of them eclipsing 30 targets last year, and they were the wide receiver 3 and 4 for at least to start the year.
I also wonder, with Diggs last year compared to this year, how much of it has to do with the mentality that he was taking mm-hmm. under. Or take, you know what I'm saying?
Undertaking,
yeah. There's the word. How much of it was his mentality there, knowing that he was the guy? Now when he's in Houston, he knows, hey, there's younger guys ahead of me. I'm going to be wide receiver 3 probably, and I'm okay with that because I'm at this point in my career, I'm going to be playing with a great quarterback that's just as good
yep.
as, or projects to be just as good as
yeah,
Josh Allen.
Could be, yeah.
He's not there yet. I almost said that, but he's not there yet. But he projects to be as good as Josh Allen. And now he doesn't have to be in the same high-pressure situations every game. I think if I'm Diggs,
mm-hmm.
that's the change in mentality there. You that's the
wonder,
change
though.
In mindset of, I don't have to be number one anymore. I don't have to be so highly competitive. He's going to be competitive, but he doesn't have to be that
in-your-face
competitor anymore.
But I wonder if a lot of the stress... You know, we talk a lot about that with, you know, Allen only had one guy to throw to. I wonder if Diggs felt the stress of, I'm the only guy consistently getting open here. And all of a sudden, you know, towards the end of the year, it wasn't really working. Even throwing the ball to Diggs a lot. I know Sneaky Joe's brought this stat up, too, of like, they still threw Diggs the ball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't effective. It wasn't working.
Well, that's my point with the whole, you know, other people around him sort of mentality is he can still perform in these big moments. It's just not as important because he's not the number one. He's not the only guy getting open. He's not the only guy catching the ball.
No, I mean, we're saying this in a positive light. We'll see. I expect him to be the third option, at least in the wide receivers, for CJ Stroud to throw to, and we'll see how he handles that.
Right, and also if, you know, Tank Dell, Nico Collins, if they don't perform, if Diggs has to be the number one, are we going to see this other mentality, this other side of him? If there is such a thing, if this is how it all worked out, are we going to see that come out? Are we going to see him kind of change back to what he was here? It, again, if all of that is true, because that's just me speculating. That's just me thinking a competitor's mindset might change a little bit.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for the calls, everyone. That's going to do it for me and Josh today. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10 to 12 as we are one day closer to Bills versus Cardinals on Sunday afternoon. Have a great rest of your day, everyone. Coming up next, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.